Greetings and welcome to another episode of Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And, oh, wow, you sound so mellow and down tempo. Is that because of today's musician?
My steam engine ran out.
Aww. Okay. Today we were talking about a duo that kind of crosses the line between jazz and rock. Maybe a little art. Prog? Ooh, you're going to be able to help me if this is if these guys are considered prog or not.
They have definitely influenced them. I can't say influence the genre. I can't say if they are or not because they sound so solidly 70s jazz. Yacht rock, old man wearing cabana shirt rock.
Yeah, very good. Well, the band we're talking about is Steely Dan, and that automatically means that Tina's going to be skipping this episode of Coverville because she is no fan of the Dan.
Which is that funny a bumper because, sticker that she has in her car?
No, but if they made one, she'd probably put it on there. And it's funny because this, I'd bring Steely Dan in one of my top 20 favorite bands.
Wow, they went up since last week. You said top 50 last week.
Did I say top 50? Yeah, I'm going to say top 20. Well, they can be in both.
Well, by default, they are, but I'm surprised you bumped them up.
Yeah, I was thinking about it, and I'd forgotten that I said top 50, but I've been thinking about it. It's like, yeah, they're up there, especially after listening to their full library. I really, really like the vibe, and this is good doing other stuff music. You know, it's mellow, it's good and repetitive in the arrangements. The lyrics are clever, so if you do find yourself listening to lyrics, you're not going to say, oh, these are inane. But they're good. God, I don't want to say background music because it's not really just, you know, audio quicksand, not quicksand, audio garbage. It's good stuff, and it should be paid some attention to, if not all attention to.
So
how's that?
It is the anti-Megadeth.
Oh, my God, yes. Yeah, absolutely. Definitely the anti-Megadeth. Jeez, that's a great now that's a bumper sticker right there. The band was formed by Walter Becker and Donald Fagen in 1967 in New York. They blended elements of Latin, jazz, R&B, and blues music, along with an idea that the studio is just another instrument that they can use to get what they want done. They're also noted for using very cryptic and ironic lyrics. After Becker and Fagen met, they played in a variety of bands together, including the Leather Canary, which also featured Chevy Chase on drums. After college in 1969, they were hired to work on the soundtrack to the Richard Pryor film, You've Gotta Walk It Like You Talk It, or You'll Lose That Beat.
They later said they did that just for the money, which makes sense because I've never heard of that film. Wrong for you, 'cause you gotta know what you need to know what you got to do. You gotta walk it, just like you talk it, I'll be sure you're gonna lose that beat. Yeah, you gotta walk it. No,
I haven't either. So was there money? Was there money involved in that? Wow.
Well, I'm sure there was a budget for this for the music, for the movie. But I'm sure there was no back end or residuals they pulled from that.
Definitely not. And as popular as Richard Pryor films are, it's surprising that neither of us have ever heard of that film. Yep. After that, they worked on a long series of demos until 1971. Then they joined Jane the Americans for about 18 months. They had a little bit of success after that.
Barbara Streisand did record I Mean to Shine, which is something they wrote.
Ah, didn't know that. In late 1971, they became staff writers for ABC Records, working with Gary Katz, and then Katz would go on to produce all of their albums in the 70s.
And engineer Roger Nichols, who would win 6 Grammys, would start working with the band.
Boy, and hearing that they were writers for a while, staff writers, doesn't surprise me because they've got this vibe like they want to be the smartest people in the room.
Yes.
And especially Donald Fagen, especially in the lyrics, Donald Fagen.
Also, there's this idea, you know, the, what was it called? The advertising agency where they cranked out all the songs. Not Tin Pan Alley, but.
Not the Brill Buildings.
Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking about.
Okay.
And it feels like they worked in there because it's not like they work badly, but mm-hmm. I can tell they have a formula mm-hmm. and I can tell that they go through their formula and they just crank stuff out. They work fast. They work within their comfort zone and they have success within that comfort zone, which I'm not disparaging what they did at all. I'm just saying 1 + 1 + 1 equals Steely Dan.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say that's that's a good description. I know there was an interview, and I've been trying to find it because I know it came out a few months ago, but Donald Fagen, I guess when he was a writer with ABC, did music interviews as well. And there was one interview where he goes on this weird, like, really descriptive. Oh, here it is. Is this it? Yes, it's okay. It's Donald Fagen interviewing Ennio Morricone, the spaghetti Western musician. And this actually is more recent. It's from 1989. So they tapped Donald Fagen as a writer to interview Ennio Morricone. And I'm going to read this verbatim. This is the actual interview from Donald Fagen. And this is all one question. But isn't it true that the Leone films, like you said, the Sergio Leone films, with their elevation of mythic structures, their comic book visual style and extreme irony, are now perceived as signaling an aesthetic transmutation by a generation of artists and filmmakers? And isn't it also true that your music for those films reflected and abetted Leone's vision by drawing on the same eerie catalog of genres, Hollywood Western, Japanese samurai, American pop, and Italian opera? That your scores function both inside the film as narrative voice and outside the film as the commentary of a winking jester? Put it all together, and doesn't it spell postmodern in the sense that there has been a grotesque encroachment of the devices of art and, in fact, an establishment of a new narrative plane founded on the devices themselves? Isn't that what's attracting Lower Manhattan? And Ennio Morricone's response is shrugs.
I was gonna say yes.
Right. Yes.
But shrugs is a better answer.
Shrugs is an even better answer because it if that doesn't exemplify Steely Dan and specifically Donald Fagen, I don't know how true that is. That was posted by Kurt Loder. So, I mean, Kurt Loder, very respected journalist for MTV. So I think it's got to be true.
Okay. But, help me out again. Who is the lead singer, primary writer for Talking Heads?
David Byrne.
Yes. We should get David Byrne and Fagen in the same room and just hit record.
Just listen to them talk. Yeah. I still would feel like David Byrne would be the more down to earth of the two. And I could see him getting fed up and walking out.
Well, he would definitely be the straight man in the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't think of any like parallel to Donald Fagen verbally, you know, like basically would go on a tear or on a not pedantic, but there's a gotta be the smartest guy in the room kind of quality to that.
There's almost a pompousness.
Yes.
A pomposity.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that comes through in Steely Dan music as well.
Yeah.
And so we'll talk about that. All right. So anyway, working with Gary Katz, Katz actually suggested that he and Becker, Fagen and Becker form a band. They added Denny Diaz, Jeff Baxter, Jim Hodder, and David Palmer, and they named their band after the steam-powered dildo in the William S. Burroughs novel, Naked Lunch.
I wonder how that conversation went.
Throwing out names. What should we call our band? How about Steely Dan? Oh, what's that? Oh, it's the steam-powered dildo in the Naked Lunch. Yeah.
I'd like to know how that came about.
Fly on the wall.
Yeah.
In early 1972, they released a single with Dallas on the A side and Sail the Water, Waterway on the B side. The release was very limited and it sold very poorly. You told me how to tie a sailor knot and maybe how to swim. And though my man and I got it together, he still knows what to do. He say, come on and sail the water away. It feels so good on you. Come on and sail.
The limited run has made these highly, highly collectible.
I'll bet. Yeah, among fans. Those two songs are the only official Steely Dan tracks to have never been reissued.
They were called Stinko in an interview with Becker and Fagan in the mid 90s.
That's funny. Like the Becker and Fagan called them Stinko.
Yep.
That's awesome.
So I'm wondering if maybe Tina has a copy of that album since she's such a huge fan.
Yeah, she might. Maybe that was what turned her off from Steely Dan, is that unofficial demo that
it was Stinko limited. And she never went back.
Poco did cover Dallas on their Head Over Heels album. In 1972, they released their first album as Steely Dan, entitled Can't Buy a Thrill. It contained the hit singles Do It Again and Reelin' in the Years.
Your everlasting summer, you can see it fading fast. So you grab a piece of something that you think is gonna last. Well, you wouldn't even know a diamond if you held it in your hand. The things you think are precious.
Later on, the song Dirty Work was also released as a single. Fagan didn't want to sing on stage, and he left Palmer to sing while they were on their first tour. However, Katz and Becker liked Fagan's voice better and worked with him to sing more live. Becker left the band before the next album without much fanfare.
He worked with Carole King to help her write Jazzman.
Oh, interesting. Okay. During that time. In 1973, they released Countdown to Ecstasy. This wasn't as successful as the first album was. Becker and Fagan weren't terribly happy with it. They felt that it had been recorded too quickly while they're out on tour, and it suffered because of that.
Any news was good news, and the feeling was bad at home. I was out of.
The songs Showbiz Kids and My Old School were released as singles, but they only had moderate chart success. The song My Old School is a description of their time up at in Annandale at college. In 1974, they released the album Pretzel Logic. The album includes their most successful song, Ricky Don't Lose That Number, and a direct note-for-note cover of Duke Ellington's East St. Louis Toodaloo. Royce Jones and Michael McDonald were additions to the group, along with drummer Jeff Porcaro.
Jeff only played drums on one track, Night by Night. Jim Gordon, he played the drums on all the rest of them.
Cool. He's the commissioner in Batman, isn't he?
That's what I was going to say. I was going to make the joke, but I didn't want to get the name wrong because
it's definitely Jim Gordon. Yeah, that's funny. Batman. And Michael McDonald, it's funny because, you know, you talk about yacht rock, and I feel like anything with Michael McDonald automatically qualifies as yacht rock.
Yes. Even that song that seemed to permeate every consciousness in 1987 from Running Scared.
Oh, yeah. Sweet Freedom. Sure. Without a doubt. The original band started showing cracks. Becker and Fagan didn't want a tour, but Baxter and Hodder did. Those two ended up leaving the band. Steely Dan's reliance on studio musicians led to a diminished role for Baxter and Hodder as well. Michael McDonald would provide vocals for Steely Dan until he and Baxter joined the Doobie Brothers. He came from somewhere back in alone. Their last tour date was in July of 1974. That's absolutely yacht rock. In 1975, they released the album Katie Lied. This thing was certified gold and reached number 13 on the album charts. The single Black Friday broke the top 40 by reaching 37, and the recording was done with a wide array of studio musicians. Jeff Porcaro and David Paich, who also played on the album, would go on to form Toto.
They wanted perfection in the studio, and they would ask for upwards of like 40 takes or something crazy like that on each song. It was crazy the amount of work they're making people do.
Wow. Yeah, that's and Toto, totally yacht rock. So there's absolutely yacht rock stratosphere going on here with a whole bunch of different planets and galaxies.
Yacht rockception.
Yacht rockception. There you go. Although the album Katie Lied did well, Fagan and Becker felt that it sounded bad because of a faulty noise reduction system that they publicly apologized for on the back cover. Yeah, perfectionists for sure. In 1976, they released The Royal Scam. This is the band's most guitar-oriented album, and it sold well in the U.S., and the single Haitian Divorce reached number 20 in the U.K. Soon everybody knew the thing was dead. He shouts, she bites, they wrangle through the night, yeah. She go crazy, got to make a getaway, Papa say, oh. 1977 saw the release of the album Asia. Jazz-influenced album reached the top five in the U.S.
It was also one of the first albums to be certified platinum for over 1 million sales.
I believe it. That thing was huge. The songs Peg and Deacon Blues were both released as singles. Did really, really well. This album locked in Fagen and Becker's reputation as songwriters and experts in the studio. A tour was starting to be arranged in support of the album, but it was canceled after band members and backing musicians started comparing how much they were making.
Also, just like I mentioned last week, the album is covered on the Classic Album series, and right now it's on Amazon Prime. I recommend going because it's one of those ones, like I said, you sit there and you hear them talking through these things like, oh, I know that song. I love that song. Mm-hmm. Wait, I know that song. I love that song.
I believe it. Fagen and Baxter wrote the soundtrack for the movie FM. The movie was a disaster, but the song, the title track, was a little bit of a hit in the UK and the US. In 1980, they released the album Gaucho. Now, this actually started work on the album. The two of them started work on the album in 78, a couple of years earlier. However, things weren't going well. Personal, legal, and technical setbacks delayed the release, and Becker and Fagen ended up taking a break from each other that would last over a decade. An engineer accidentally erased most of the track that Nichols and Katz liked, and it was never recovered. ABC Records was purchased, and because of that, there was a hold on releasing any new material. Around this time, Becker was hit by a cab in New York, breaking his leg in multiple places. And then they were sued for copyright infringement for the title track to the album Gaucho. In spite of all this, when the album was finally released, it was actually a moderate hit.
The single, Hey 19, reached 10.
It should have reached 19. That would have been even better. Boston, so young. Also, Long As You Know You're Living Yours, featuring Mark Knopfler, was a moderate hit as well. The song My Rival was featured in the John Huston film Phobia. The next year, the band broke up. 1981 saw them break up. Becker moved to Hawaii. Fagen released a solo album called The Nightfly in 1982. It was certified platinum in the U.S., and it reached 11 on the Billboard charts. The song IGY was released as a single. It charted at number 26 on the Hot 100.
Also released as a DVD audio in 2002.
And I think if you go back all the way to the Howard Jones episode of Soundography, I include that as my one of my songs in my set list is Howard Jones' cover of IGY, which is great. Mm-hmm. In 1988, he wrote the score to the movie Bright Lights, Big City with Michael J. Fox and Joan Jett.
This movie keeps coming up.
It really does. Why don't we just break down and watch it for the patrons?
No, it's one of those, we've probably mentioned it no less than half a dozen times in the last two seasons.
Yeah. For a movie that I think only tangentially mentions music. I mean, I know that the two of them are in a band, but it's more about drug overdose and stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think I've ever seen it, but I've sure written about it a lot in the last 2 years.
No kidding. Around this time, Becker was working with the band China Crisis for a couple of their albums, probably the one with Arizona Sky on it. In 1986, the duo played on Zazu for a Cats-produced album by Rose Vela. It was around this time that they started writing again, but this stuff was never finished. In 1993, Fagen also released the solo album Kamakiriad. It was produced by Walter Becker, and he also played bass and guitar on it, so it might as well just be a Steely Dan album. It's an 8-song optimistic concept album about our storyteller going on a trip in his high-tech car, and it was nominated for a Grammy. The release of the album, Kamakiriad, prompted a reunion as they toured in support of the album. It sold poorly, although it did gain a Grammy nomination for Album of the Year. In 1994, MCA released Citizen Steely Dan. I have this. It's a box set of the entire catalog except for Dallas and Sail the Waterway. And it's also got other tracks like FM that weren't released on albums, but included on soundtracks and things like that. Also in 1994, Becker released his first solo album with Fagen producing it called 11 Tracks of Whack. A version of Steely Dan was put together and they toured in support of the box set, which led to a live album called Alive in America. In the year 2000, they got back together for the album Two Against Nature. This is their first album in 20 years and it won 4 Grammys.
So this is with the Grammys, it actually beat Eminem's Marshall Mathers LP and Kid A by Radiohead.
Wow, both great albums. So that's crazy. Later, they released Plush TV Jazz Rock Party on DVD. This documented the live in-studio performance of many of their most popular songs. In 2001, they were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And I'm sure Fagen gave a 20-minute dissertation acceptance speech.
He's the dream theater of speeches.
He would be, right, exactly. In 2003, they released the album Everything Must Go. This album tried to capture a live feel to it. Becker actually sang lead vocals on it, and it was the first time that he'd done that. In 2006, Fagen released Morph the Cat. Fagen called this his death album in an interview for the New York Times.
And this was released on DVD audio as well.
Won the Grammy for Best Surround Sound Album that year. I did not know that was a category.
Yeah, we talked about this with, who was it? Was it Howard Jones? Somebody last season.
The Best Surround Sound Album?
We talked about this, yeah.
And I probably at that point said I didn't know that was a category.
Yes, I did the same thing, but now I know, and no one's half the
best. Now you know because you remember.
Yeah.
In the 2000s, Steely Dan continued to tour regularly. I actually saw them with Elvis Costello opening up for them. They had a more consistent lineup. In 2007, a box set called The Nightfly Trilogy was released. It's a 3-DVD, 4-CD set containing the first 3 solo albums, surround sound mixes, and tons of extras. Becker released a second solo album in 2008 called Circus Money. In 2012, Fagen released his 4th solo album called Sunken Condos. Need a carousel. I met a light young beauty and we talked that for a spell. We walked up by the green lawn and my heart began to sing.
screams out, hold on to that sleepy thing.
It contained 8 new songs and a cover of Out of the Ghetto by Isaac Hayes. They played the final show with Becker in 2017, who died, sadly, of cancer in September of that year. And in 2019, Steely Dan did a 9-night residency at the Venetian in Las Vegas.
So, you know that Universal fire that keeps coming up now?
Yeah.
The 2008 fire? Well, their stuff is listed as lost in that fire as well.
Oh, wow. Jeez. Always keep an offsite backup, kids.
Yep. Cloud storage.
That's right. That is the story of Steely Dan. Yeah. A band that, that I've gotten to see once. Their live concert was good. They brought in a guest vocalist for Dirty Work, as they did on the original album, the original studio version, and played all their hits. And it was kind of fun. My buddy, and I trying to guess which song, obviously it wasn't Tina at that concert, which song they were about to do based on the opening drums or guitar lick or whatever. We'd be like, oh, yeah, it's great. Tell me about some statistics and general notes for the band.
All right. We mentioned their success earlier, but I wanted to again mention the long-lasting creative relationship that these two had. These tandems come along kind of once in a while. They're kind of a rarity, especially nowadays. But the two people, the two-person creative force, you know, I'm sure I could name one and you could name the other. So Elton John.
And Bernie Taupin.
Yeah.
Of course.
Glenn Gene Philbrook Simmons.
And Chris Difford.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley. Yeah. Right.
These, when the right duo is put together, it's absolutely magic.
And, Meatloaf and
Ketchup.
Well done. That's very good. That's for the patrons for sure. Who's the guy who did all the Meatloaf production and like all the best Meatloaf albums?
I don't know. I know one Meatloaf song.
Oh, you know more than that. You know, two out of three.
I know I wouldn't do that, but that's it.
Yeah. Jim Steinman is the guy I'm thinking of.
All right.
Like Jim Steinman was the guy I worked with Meatloaf, and he also, you know, Total Eclipse of the Heart and Making Love Out of Nothing at All, and big producer. But yeah, I mean, that is the thing, right? These duo collaborations, it feels like it's 2 is the right number for that, to where you don't crumble under your own weight. But when they work, they work. And yeah, when they don't, it's like, you know, those years that Lennon McCartney couldn't even be in the same room together, or Sting and Andy Summers. And probably for a little while, Becker and Fagan, sounded like they needed a little bit of a separation, but not a divorce, fortunately.
Yep.
Well, let's say, like me, you get to see the band in concert. No, like I'm not rubbing it in. It's Steely Dan, for Pete's sake. What is the one song that you know that they have to perform? What are they absolutely going to do?
All right. I picked Reel It In the Years, mm-hmm. Do It Again, mm-hmm. Dirty Work, and my absolute choice is going to be Ricky, Don't Lose That Number.
Yeah, that's good. I would say Do It Again, just because of it being the first track on their first album and it being a pretty good hit. So I'd say that they've performed that a lot. Surprisingly, neither of our picks is number one. Peg is their most performed song in concert with 696 performances, followed by Hey 19, Kid Charlemagne, My Old School, Josie, Bodhisattva, Asia, Black Friday, and then number 9, Reelin' in the Years.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It isn't until we get to 21 on the list that is Ricky, Don't Lose My Number. Okay. Or Don't Lose That Number.
So if you ever wanted to throw a curveball for Babel Royale, top 15 Steely Dan songs.
There you go. This was performed in concert. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What's funny is they performed the song Green Earrings more than Ricky, Don't Lose That Number.
I almost skipped that song.
Green Earrings?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a deep cut. It's plus they're gonna turn your skin a weird color.
Yeah,
so you don't want to wear those. Their covers in concert include the theme to The Untouchables, I Want to Do Everything for You by Joe Tex, Love is Like an Itching in My Heart by The Supremes, a couple of Donald Fagen songs that get performed as part of a Steely Dan concert, IGY and New Frontier.
In the ghetto.
Not in concert, at least. Oh. Haven't gotten to them yet. Yeah, it's low on the list. I'm not seeing it. So we've talked about concerts. We've talked about Stairway to Heaven. We've talked about their statistics, their awards, their Grammy nominations, et cetera. Let's talk about who we'd like to hear them cover. Let's say they were still together. Let's say Becker was still alive. They were getting ready to do a cover album. And we each got to pick one song that would appear on that album. My pick would be the song Jane by Bare Naked Ladies, back in the day when Stephen Page and Ed Robertson. So there you go, another great combination. Stephen Page and Ed Robertson. Mm-hmm. Great working together. And then a very bitter divorce. Oh, the song by Bare Naked Ladies is called Jane. And Steely Dan, if you go back through their catalog, in addition to some weird maybe hints of impropriety and maybe underage, 19 women, they did love writing songs about women. And it was sung from the perspective of the lovelorn, broken soul. So Jane would be a great fit for this. It's a perfect song for their lyric style and their arrangement. They would totally jazz it up. It's more of a, I don't want to say a throwaway pop piece, but it's not one of Bare Naked Ladies' signature styles. It's a very mellow track on a mellow album. I think Maybe You Should Drive, if I remember correctly, but I think it would be a great fit for Steely Dan. How about you?
I picked Summertime by George Gershwin. These guys are storytelling musicians. They're skilled musicians. And with mm-hmm. that kind of yacht rocky electric piano sound and that kind of swing drum beat they usually threw in there, a version of Summertime could be right up their alley.
I think that's great. I think it'd be a great one. I'd love to hear that. I mean, you could even still get Fagen to do Summertime, and I could hear his vocals in it singing about how the living's easy, and then you figure out how to work his cousin into there. that is one of Tina's biggest arguments for why she doesn't like Steely Dan, is that their lyrics sometimes feel a little misogynistic or creepy old man with the younger woman kind of vibe. And then she brings up examples like Cousin Dupree, and it's like, okay, yeah, that's a little, it's like incest.
Okay, but then there's that Styx song that we talked about. There's Winger. I mean, we've talked about this too, where the significantly or just barely underage mm-hmm. is the target of the affection.
Listen, the Beatles talk about a girl who's just 17 and then follows it up with, you know what I mean? No one ever gives them crap.
Yeah, which is weird because Tiffany covered that. No one cared.
And no one cared. Yeah, because I think she was about 17 at the time. Playing next to the Claire's Boutique by the Spencer Getz. All right, let's talk about our set lists. This is where we pick some songs that accompany a greatest hits. There is a good Steely Dan greatest hits album called Decade. We'll link to it in the show notes. That's a great album to start with. And I think maybe one or two of the songs we're going to talk about appear on there, and we don't care. We don't care. First of my choices is a song called Berrytown. This is on Pretzel Logic. Standing by myself. So mid-70s, but this is actually one of the very first songs that Donald Fagen and Walter Becker ever played together. So it didn't even make it onto any of their first two or three albums. Had to wait until Pretzel Logic before it saw the light of day. And it's a sweet, fun song that I think is mostly, if not all, written by Donald Fagen. I think he's gone on record to say that that Walter Becker didn't have any involvement in the writing of the lyrics or music for that one. But it's kind of a jab at another New York town near Annandale when they were going to college. Showbiz Kids is my second choice. This is on the Ecstasy album. This is practically a sequel to the song Do It Again, which talks about going to Las Vegas and losing your money, and you go back and do it again. Because they sing about lost wages. The backing vocalists talk about go to lost wages, and they do that through the whole song because it's kind of funny. Because nobody knows that joke about lost wages in Las Vegas. Third song is Blues Beach. I wanted to pick something from one of their newer albums. This is from Everything Must Go. And what's cool about this song is that for a band that only really does a little bit of evolution, you go through all of their MCA albums, and you could pull a song from one, put it on another, and you probably wouldn't notice. I mean, they're very, very similar in style. Then they get into their newer albums, Two Against Nature, Everything Must Go, and there's a little bit of a change in style, but Blues Beach feels like it could have been on any of those early 70s albums easily. Time Out of Mind is my fourth choice from the album Gaucho. Also features Mark Knopfler on guitar, and it's also a great middle ground between Dire Straits and Steely Dan, which I never would have compared the two had it not been for Knopfler guest performing on this track. It feels like such a natural fit, and then you start thinking about Sultans of Swing and how that could be, you know, could have been done as a Steely Dan song. And it's a song about heroin addiction told from the perspective of someone who's getting talked into trying it for the first time. And you hear phrases like chasing the dragon in there to kind of support that. Coming from the Nightfly album from Donald Fagen is the song New Frontier. Okay, it was a hit for Donald Fagen, but technically it's not a Steely Dan greatest hit. Fit it as a bonus track on your Steely Dan. What's that?
Use a lot of semantics much in making this list?
Semantics?
Yeah.
Like breaking my rules?
Yeah, tiptoeing around the actual thing.
Listen, it's not a Steely Dan greatest hit. I wouldn't even call it a Donald Fagen. I didn't pull IGY.
No, Frontiers. I know. This is one of the ones when I was putting on the list for Spotify, I'm like, oh my gosh, this song is as popular as anything Steely Dan ever did.
Oh, is it really New Frontier?
Yeah.
Well, whatever. I'm including it. When you're putting together your Steely Dan playlist and you throw a couple Donald Fagen tracks, this should be one of them. This is fun. And if you've never seen the music video for this, it's like a tribute to the 1950s nuclear bomb safety videos with bunkers and stop, drop, and roll and get under your desk and things like that. So it's, which would probably fit a lot better than it would with IGI, or IGY, What a Beautiful World This Could Be. And then I had to throw a bonus in there because I wanted to, and it's the song True Companion. This is from the heavy metal soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
we were trying to remember what they contributed that last week when we were talking about Steely Dan. And I found this and I was like, oh yeah, I forgot how much I love this song. It's also a Donald Fagen solo, although I'd be really, really surprised if Becker didn't produce this one because it has a very, very Walter Becker feel to it. And what's cool about it is like it's 5 minutes, but it's like two songs in one. The first half of the song is this guitar instrumental with some great, great electric guitar work. And about halfway through, it drops and comes back as kind of a breezy, harmonized, stepping out type piece, like a Joe Jackson stepping out. Another great comparison there. It's just a gorgeous song. And I've forgotten how much I loved not just that song, but man, this whole soundtrack.
And that brings me to commentary. This is commentary on the heavy metal soundtrack by Hammond Chamberlain.
Okay.
When you have a movie called Heavy Metal and it's animated.
Yes.
I feel like you should actually have, I don't know, heavy metal on the soundtrack.
it's like Jeff Goldblum tapping on the camera. You are going to have some heavy metal on your soundtrack to Heavy Metal, aren't you?
And that has always bothered me about that soundtrack.
You don't consider Devo and Donald Fagen and Stevie Nicks to be heavy metal? Journey? Open Arms?
Journey's about as close as you get, but then you put in Open Arms and it blows
right.
out of
it's
the
like
water.
It's like the least heavy metal Journey song.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. Boy, you look at, yeah. I mean, they did at least fit some Sammy Hagar and some Black Sabbath and Cheap Trick
like,
on there.
They're like token entries in it.
They really are. Yeah. Yeah, that is funny. All right, good commentary and apt commentary. Hammond, tell me your set list.
All right, my first one I picked was Jack of Speed from Two Against Nature. Such a cool introduction. And that's the one thing I can't say is they knew how to write solid introductions that pulled you in.
Yeah.
And kept you interested. This is just a great song. Good, solid Steely Dan example song. I mean, if you're going to hold up a couple, this is one of them. And I've forgotten how much I liked it until I heard it this time around. I'm like, oh yeah, I really dig this song. Then my that's next cool. one is The Caves of Altamira. It's from Scam. This is like a kid going with his imagination, or he's talking about the new WoW expansion. I don't know.
It is such a funny title for them. Yeah, for sure.
But it's a cool song. And the whole time when he's talking about, you know, the being a kid and playing and stuff like that, I'm like, okay, it's a kid in his imagination. But then when I looked at the title again, I'm like, it really could be a new WoW expansion. You finish Pandaria easily. And you move on to Altamiria.
Altamira, yes. How far are you in Altamira? Oh, I'm only level 18. keyboard rock interviewer.
I'm on the yacht rock monster.
That's right. I'm on the quest where I'm waiting for Josie to come home.
My third one is Only a Fool Would Say That. Salads and sun, only a fool would say that.
Unhand that gun, be gone. There's no one to fire upon.
This sounds like a 70s beach party song. And like I said, it's cabana rock, but it does have better harmonies than standard cabana rock stuff. My Old School is my fourth one. If I didn't know better, I think this is a Billy Joel tune. Still September when your daddy was quite surprised. Yeah. I love the piano in this. It also sounds like it belongs in a musical. And by the way, this brings me back to something we haven't talked about very much, but as far as catalog musicals go, these guys are ripe.
Oh, they are. This would be such a great one. Holy cow. Yeah, somebody needs to get on this.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's been proposed and they've turned it down.
Well, Fagin still could be writing the rejection letter.
Here are 372 reasons why this is a bad idea.
But I stumbled on the idea of a catalog musical.
Yeah.
And there's so many ways you go with it. I mean, so many different stories you could tell, and they all kind of knit together beautifully with different sections of their catalog. You could do a really cool thing with it.
I think it'd be a perfect, like, you've nailed it, right? Like, you would do it taking place in college, and the title would be My Old School, right? The title of the musical would be My Old School, and it's them recounting their experiences in college with 19-year-old girls named Peg and going up to Berrytown. I mean, I feel like it's writing itself just as we talk about it.
And it would have to definitely be a period piece. There's no way you could set this now. It would have to be in the 70s.
Yeah.
But I think that just lends itself to lots of costuming ideas and fun you could have with social topics you couldn't have elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
And my last one is Josie from Asia. Maybe a hit, and we've talked about this. I don't care. I have very strong memories of this playing when I was hanging out with kids in like third and fourth grade because it was always on AFN radio. And the start of this song, that chord progression before it goes into it, is just so freaking cool.
Yeah. That's the one that's a dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. They knew, like you said, they know how to begin a song. Ricky, Don't Lose That Number begins with that weird, like, almost xylophone. Yep. And they never played that part on the radio. It just went right into the right at the beginning of the song. Yeah. Good stuff, Hammond. That was great. That is Steely Dan in a nutshell. And but we want to hear what your thoughts are on Steely Dan as well. We'll get to how you can contact us and let us know about your choices, your thoughts on Steely Dan in just a minute. But before we do that, I want to tell you about next week, next week's episode of Soundography. It's our every season duty to pick a year in music. And this one is no exception. 1988 in music is going to be our discussion.
This is the year I graduated from high school.
It's the year after I graduated. And, but believe me, I still have fond memories of the music of the late 80s. Michael Jackson was putting out Man in the Mirror.
Leave Me Alone. I think he was also, but that was also.
I think so. Actually, yeah, Bad was that year. Dirty Diana and the title track Rattle and Hum by U2 came out. So, and a song by Marvin Gaye came back because of a bunch of claymation raisins on television.
Yes,
talk about that.
I will also make a very heavy prediction that our playlists are going to be incredibly different.
Oh, I'm sure they will. Cause this is when you really veered into metal and I planted my feet so firmly into the end of new wave.
Yeah. But I will say this, that I've already made my list and I've already got a few surprises on there.
Okay. Cool. I can't wait to see. I haven't even started listening to this stuff. So I'm sure I will. I'm sure we'll have a great list. So cool. Excellent. Well, looking forward to getting all that together. Now we're going to tell you how to contact us. If email is your bag, well, send it to our bag. Soundography podcast@gmail.com is where you do that. We're on Twitter @TheSoundography. of course, our website is soundography.com. Once you're there, you can download old episodes, check out playlists, follow our links to things like Amazon and Spotify, where we have the playlists of the songs that we add on for every episode, as well as a link to buy the album we recommend. We definitely recommend you pick up Steely Dan Decade, although if you're really adventurous, try and find a copy of Citizen Steely Dan. You won't regret it. You can also join our Patreon. We love getting your support there. And if you're a patron, then you're going to get a new episode next week for the movie 808, which is about the drum machine thing. We talk about music-related movies once a month. And I think once we do 808, I think our next one has to be Bright Lights, Big City. Contractually obligated to do that. Of course, leave a review for our show wherever you get your podcasts, wherever that may be. You know where you're getting them. I don't have to tell you where you're getting them. Just do that. Hammond, anything to close out before we close out this episode?
No, I really enjoyed Steely Dan. This was it was weird how it was a nice palate cleanser coming out of Blue Cheer.
I think so. Yeah. Even though there was some overlap time-wise from the bands, but boy, total different style and everything to them. So good. I'm glad you had fun. I had a lot of fun as well. Onwards to 1988. And on behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Abbott saying that just about covers it for Soundography. We'll see you next time right here for another failed outro.
Show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.